International Sports. Join the program by 217-356-9397 or send a text to the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. You can also email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are your hosts, Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Saturday Sports Talk. On the road again this week in search of pancakes, sausage, and bacon. And I think we found it at the 24th annual CU Kiwanis Pancake Breakfast, going on until 11 o'clock this morning at Bromley Hall on 3rd Street on the University of Illinois campus. Come on by and enjoy a great all-you-can-eat breakfast here. Lauren Tate alongside. We've got a host of guests lined up for you. How are you, Mr. Tate?
Very good.
All set to go. We're going to lead things off with Lou Henson. Always, you're a fixture at this event, aren't you, Lou? You love
Steve,
this.
Nice to be here with you, you and Lauren. You do a great job on the show, so I'm happy to be a part of it.
You've spent a lot of time over the years in this building, haven't you?
Yes, I have. You know, during the summer, we had our camp. We started a camp. We had 14. We had, I think we had, we must have had maybe 30 kids or 35, and we got it up to 1,800. So we spent a lot of time here.
Well, Lou, a lot of things happening in sports these days. Gambling is now a fixture. Did you ever think you'd see this happen at college basketball, that you could gamble on it?
Hey, I never thought I'd see it. There are a lot of things happening that I didn't believe would happen, but no, I thought I'd never see that.
Have you ever run across anything during your coaching career where that was a consideration or a concern?
We never even thought about it.
Yeah.
See, back when I was coaching, it's not like it is now. There's been gambling, but not like it is now.
Well, what do you see on the basketball front that you know, that interests you or surprises you these days?
Well, the way they recruit surprises me, because they go out and contact maybe 45, 50 people, and a lot of those are probably offered a scholarship. But back, we didn't do that.
What did an offer mean when you offered somebody? I mean, you were going to actually take them, right?
When we offered a scholarship, we were prepared to take them. We would not offer a scholarship unless we have space for them.
Well, how does it work when you offer 25 or 30 people? I mean, what does that mean to the recruit himself? Everybody must know that you can't take 25 or 30 people.
I don't know how the recruits would handle that, but that's right. You can only take maybe 4 or 5 at the most.
Brad Underwood's going to join us coming up in about an hour on the phone. He is out of town. Matter of fact, he was in St. Louis last night for the Bragging Rights game between the Missouri and Illinois fans were there for the Cardinals-Phillies game. We'll tell you more about that later on. But he's got a big roster change with a whole bunch of new guys, 6 new guys coming in. You never had to churn a roster like that. What kind of problems or issues will he face in doing that?
It may time. All of them expect to start, but he's a good coach, he'll handle it, but it can be a little difficult.
Lou, you got the gala coming up, the Hall of Fame gala coming up June the 15th in Chicago. You going to make that?
You bet I'll make it. That's really a nice affair.
I noticed you were there last year. Now, you were the only one there wearing an orange shirt last year, an orange jacket, rather.
That's right. You're supposed to wear a tux. I'll wear my orange coat again. If I can't wear that, I won't show up.
I was going to say, you were easy to pick out because everybody else was dressed in black.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Coach, how you feeling these days?
You know, I'm doing pretty well, Steve. Getting along pretty well.
Not back on the golf course, though, are you?
No, I probably won't be there for a while.
Well, we miss seeing you out there. Always enjoyed seeing you down around the orange and blue golf courses. And you're welcome to come out anytime and just hang out.
I know. As a matter of fact, when I played at least 3 or 4 days out of the week. So I enjoyed golf.
How close are you watching the NBA playoffs?
I try to watch every game.
What do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. Houston lost the first game to Golden State. I thought Golden State might win all of them. Well, the next game, Houston ran them off of the court.
They did.
Had them down 15-20. So I don't know what's going to happen. We got a lot of good teams, but Golden State is still the team to beat, I think.
I know that one game Cleveland lost it 0-for-12 from 3-point. you can't do that. You know, the three-point shot is too valuable. I mean, and if you can't hit them.
Yeah.
Now, when you started out, how many did anybody besides Altenberg get to shoot the three the first year of it?
I think he was probably the only one, and I didn't want him to. I thought that was ridiculous, the three-point shot. I never dreamed it would be like it is now. See, there are so many kids today that can shoot it in high school, college, and so it's a very important thing to have.
You think they'll push it back and make it a little longer shot, like at the international level maybe?
Well, they might, but I'd kind of like to see it where it is because it's a little more exciting if you make those threes. I'd prefer to leave it there.
So is your thought, your feeling about the three-point shot changed over time? You said you didn't like it at first. Have you kind of come to embrace it now?
And so you better like it now. Everybody else, all the recruits, they like it. But it is a great thing to have. You almost have to have the three-point shot. You can't win without it. And in college, you got to recruit people who can shoot it.
What happened to the mid-range jumper? You're either dunking or shooting three-pointers at a lot of levels.
They're not looking for that now.
Yeah.
Every team that has three-point, that's what they're trying to get.
I remember Adolph Rupp saying all he wanted to do was get the 15 to 18-foot shot. That was his goal. No three-point shot in those days.
That's right.
Now it's the worst shot in basketball.
Yeah.
You know, you either get layups or three-pointers. The 20-foot shot's the worst shot because if you just take one step back, it's worth another point.
Yep.
That's why you have so many upsets now because the teams can shoot three. If they're hot, it's hard to beat them.
Exactly. I think it is a big upset factor.
Yeah.
So you and Mary will be around through part of football season, will you, before you go back to New Mexico?
Yeah. We'll go back there for a while, but we should be here most of the time. Yeah.
All right, Coach, good to see you as always. Appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Steve. Lauren, nice to be with you. And that shirt he's wearing, I'll collect some money. He's not supposed to wear that unless he pays me.
I understand. Should be a royalty coming on that.
Yeah, would you see if you can?
It's a Henson shirt.
Yeah. Okay, guys, nice to be here with you.
Thanks, Coach. I'll work on that. Lauren's got a Lou Henson long sleeve designer polo shirt on with the orange blazer on there. All right, we're off and rolling on Saturday Sports Talk. We're at the Pancake Breakfast, Kiwanis Club Pancake Breakfast. We're here until 11. The breakfast goes on until 11. If you're out driving around, stop on by. Lou Henson will be here for a little while yet, and as I mentioned, we'll be here until 11. We'll get you up to date on some of the scores from last night as we move our way through. The phone lines are open, 356-9397. Feel free to join us. We'll take our first break and be back with more Saturday Sports Talk after this. Okay. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk. 10 minutes after 9 o'clock, Steve Kelly, Lauren Tate, Ed Bond is here as well. We're at Bromley Hall for the 24th annual CU Kiwanis Pancake and Sausage Breakfast. It's going on until 11 o'clock this morning if you'd like to join us. And if you're out and about and thinking about coming by here, and maybe you've been thinking about some other Saturday duties like maybe your windows or doors need replaced at your home, the job is only as good as the products and installation, and I'd like to suggest a trip today perhaps to the Pella Window Store at 1001 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign. Mike Mary and the folks there have been assisting homeowners and businesses for more than 40 years, and they do it the right way. You know, there are a lot of things to consider when replacing windows and doors: security, comfort, convenience among them. A great window or door is only as good as the installation, and the Pella Window Store has many examples on the showroom floor and several styles and price ranges: entry doors, sliding patio doors, hinged patio doors, storm doors, casement windows, double and single hung windows, sliding windows, and much more. Stop by. They're open until noon today. The Pella Window Store, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, until noon on Saturday. Check them out online at pellaofchampaign.com. Happy to be joined here at Bromley Hall by Brett Stillwell, Senior Associate Athletic Director at the University of Illinois in charge of capital projects. And Brett, I'm guessing there's a lot keeping you busy these days, not the least of which is the Football Performance Center. Could you give us an update on that?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me on, guys. It's great to be here. The Football Performance Center is going well, so this is an easy interview this morning. So we're on schedule, we're on budget. We have foundations and slabs going down right now. Steel will start in June, and we should have a steel frame erected by the time football season starts. So it'll be exciting for football fans as they come to the games this year and watch the building go up each week.
When will it be completed?
The building will be completed for next fall 19 football season. So it's an aggressive schedule, but we're on schedule. We should be enclosed by winter, work on the interiors, and be set to go for the football season.
So when the football season is going on this year and people come from week to week, they'll actually see progress from week to week, right?
Absolutely. Yeah,
kind of, it kind of a neat fun way to watch it.
Yep.
Tell us the things that will be inside. I mean, is there going to be a barber shop? Is there going to be a swimming pool? Is there going to be a bowling alley? I mean, I hear all these things.
All three of the above.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Yeah, so, you know, it's truly a great facility. It'll have everything that the players need for performance and development. It'll also have amenities for them to relax and have great fun together. So it's a great facility. There will be, you know, our sports med will be like none other in the nation. We'll be able to treat our athletes and treat them for injuries with hydrotherapy pools and then bowling alleys and great lounge.
And you're going to have weight training in there.
There will be. There'll be a large strength room.
The question is always then, what happens to the old strength room? You got a good one there right now. Is that going to be used by the rest of the program, or in addition to football, or is it going to be changed?
Yeah, the beauty of this is we'll create a great new facility for our football team. And you're right, we have a number of facilities in the North football stands that'll be utilized by our other programs. So it's really a win-win proposition.
Talking to Brett Stillwell. Phone lines are open, 356-9397. I believe we do have a caller on the line. Lloyd in Champaign, what's on your mind, sir?
Oh, actually, this is a basketball question. I was wondering if they're going to play a basketball game at the United Center this year. I haven't seen anything scheduled.
That's a good question. We'll ask Underwood. We're going to talk to Underwood at 10 o'clock. Have you heard, Steve, anything about a game? I haven't heard about who we're going to play in Chicago.
I've not either, but we'll bring that up when we talk to the Illini coach. Thanks, Lloyd. We appreciate the call.
Back to
projects. We talked about the Football Performance Center. What's kind of next on your on your list there?
Well, it's an exciting time for sure. We have a number of projects going. We just started design on Demersion Park, which is a facility that will benefit both track and soccer. So it's really kind of a tremendous story, a success story. The Demersions have been so gracious. I can't say enough about their donation and contribution of money, but also their investment in our student athletes and their interest in their academic as well as athletic well-being. So we just started design on that. That'll be a facility that houses support locker rooms and facilities for both track and soccer, and then develops two new soccer fields, and eventually the track will be redeveloped.
How involved are you with the hockey possibilities, and where do you think we are on that?
Well, in the early going, I would say for the most part, Josh Whitman and Warren Hood carried the torch on that and worked with the developers downtown. We've kind of gotten through the fun part of it. I'll say the initial fun part. We've picked a site. We've developed what the building might look like and develop some renderings. Now I'll say we're in the nitty-gritty part of it, which is trying to make sure that we understand the total cost of the building, what the long-term cost of maintaining and operating a building like that would be, and then also stirring donor interest and looking at possible funding sources.
If you were able to complete this thing in several years, let's say, and had a hockey team in place, from year to year, this is a men's hockey team. I don't know if you're talking about women or not, but if with a men's team, could you break even on income from attendance on a consistent basis?
Well, certainly I think the interest is very, very high, and it's one of the things we're trying to determine right now. I mean, you know, what is it actually going to cost, and what will it cost to operate, and can we make money at it? I think in the initial stages, our hope would be to try to at least break even and then move forward and gain on that possibility. But
was this seat 5 or 6 or more?
We're looking at about 5,000 seats. So,
You don't think maybe you could seat more for hockey?
You know,
I mean, I see around the Big Ten they actually have more than 5,000 attendance.
Yeah, at some point. And there's great interest. You know, we've looked at a lot of different facilities. Notre Dame has about 5,000. Penn State has about 5,000. Minnesota seats 8,000. So
Wisconsin's got a nice place.
Wisconsin has a large attendance as well. So I think the interest is very high, and, you know, certainly we'd love to put more seats in if we think we can fill them.
I would think that would be a key part of your strategy, is going around to see what's out there, what's working at other places and comparable schools in the Big Ten or wherever. And that's probably a fun part too, right, to see what everybody else is doing.
Absolutely, and the people have been fantastic at the different facilities. I'm amazed by the Big Ten and our other institutions. We share, and, you know, they've given us a great deal of information. It's been very helpful. Certainly we would do the same for them.
Are you going to get any help, do you think, from the NHL, from the National Hockey League?
You know,
financial.
Yeah, certainly we've gotten a lot of backing and support from the NHL in pushing the opportunity. Financially, we'd love to have some input from them, and I think that's yet to be seen. So,
talk a little bit about your background. You've got a couple of degrees from the U of I. You're a local guy and have been involved in the university for some time.
Yeah, you know, I'm extremely fortunate. I'm local to the area. Got my degrees here. I'm an architect. Had a practice. Once we sold the practice, I went to work for the university, and now I have the great opportunity of working with architecture and working with athletics, which I love.
Talking to Brett Stillwell, if you have any questions about capital projects, give us a call, 356-9397. How many things can you balance at one time? Yeah, I mean, these are the big ones you talked about.
Right.
Anything else down in the pipeline that you want to give us a little scoop on?
Yeah, I mean, we have a number of projects, and, you know, hockey is a little bit of a linchpin in that the development of that would also provide some training venues for some of our other sports, which would be extremely helpful. The possibility of having volleyball and wrestling train there as well as perform there, and would take the pressure off of some of our other facilities.
So this would be, you'd have ice, but you'd cover the ice.
Yes, yes, and use it for other sports. So, you know, and that's a very current trend that's been successful. We've reviewed that, and we'd like to see this be a multi-purpose venue.
The only thing I will say about that is when I sit down in St. Louis, my feet get cold. There's ice underneath there. Remember that when we sat on the floor?
Well, yeah, that was a long time ago. But
it was a long time ago.
The old arena down there,
yeah.
Where you take a stack of newspapers to put between your feet in the ice. But that was a great atmosphere.
I started wearing double socks for that.
Yeah, there's some good times down there. How do you stay out in front of, obviously, you've got to have a plan if you get the funding, but you don't know if you're going to get the funding, and how do you balance that, the chicken or the egg kind of thing?
It definitely is a chicken and egg. I mean, we have lots of ideas out there. I think Josh Whitman does a great job of kind of balancing the wish list with the reality, and, you know, You develop the designs, you develop the ideas, but then you definitely go out there and see if there's donor interest, look at all our other funding possibilities, and make sure that we're going down the right path.
We're going to have Underwood on here at 10 o'clock, and one of the things that he hasn't talked a lot about it, but he really wants an improvement on his practice facility. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know that he's not entirely happy with Ubbin, and Ubbin a few years ago was state-of-the-art, but it's not anymore, is it?
Right. Absolutely. I mean, that came in, and I think that's the way with all facilities. The newest facility right now will be an old facility shortly. So, that Ubbin facility, when it was developed, was state-of-the-art, as you said. Now it does need some improvements, I think, to be kept up with our competitors, and certainly that is on our list. So,
I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing for a guy like you, but it surprises me sometimes how quickly what was state-of-the-art is no longer state-of-the-art.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're falling behind almost.
You know, and we're trying to address that in the Football Performance Center. For one thing, we're building it faster so that we can capture the most current technology. But we've kind of planned it for updates, made it flexible, because we realize that what is good will change.
You know, the outside of the football stadium looks so much different now coming in from the north side.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's west side, rather. And it's really kind of the way you've got it all set up now. I don't know how you improve on that.
Yeah, yeah.
You got the statue there. And now where's the Butkus statue going to go?
We'll have a statue out in front of the Football Performance Center. The Football Performance Center will face south off of the current Irwin Indoor Practice
right.
Facility, and the northeast will be the main public entry, two-story lobby, statue out in front in the plaza. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Got time to squeeze a call in. Tim from Champaign, you're on Saturday Sports Talk. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, guys. With all the planning of all these new facilities, it seems like our 20-year fans in the east balcony of the football stadium are on the back burner. Can we hear when that's going to be done?
Yeah, I think we made a very conscious decision. I think Josh Whitman has been very smart in saying that it's most important right now to build the highest quality football team we can, and then we will build seats. So I think the one thing I will share is that we maintained the contract with the architects for the south and the east, and we continue to look at the development for that and are hopeful that we could move forward with a project in that location in the future.
You know, I don't know how
we're just far behind all the other fans.
We understand and acknowledge that that needs improvements. And like I say, we have some exciting ideas on improving that, and we'll work towards that.
Thanks for the call, Tim. We appreciate it.
One quick and last question, baseball. We got a baseball game today, hopefully, at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
Game's going to be on Big Ten Network. We got a lot. I think it's a decent facility, but it's falling behind now. What are the plans as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, we have a master plan for baseball, a number of things that we want to improve on that. We're going to try and pick those pieces off one at a time. We'd love to do a huge project that takes care of all of them at once. But
you need to build a facility for the beer drinkers because you know there's going to be beer drink, and you know you're going to need a place for them.
That's right. That's right, and I can tell you that the plans incorporate some ideas for that as well.
Okay.
So.
Hey, Brett, we appreciate your time.
Yep.
I hope you still have time to get out on the golf course this weekend, but thanks for stopping by. Good stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet.
Thanks, guys.
Brett Stillwell, Senior Associate AD for Capital Projects and Facilities here as we move towards 9:25. Got a minute, Lauren, to kind of check out things that happened last night before we call Steve Beckett in to talk about sports gambling. Baseball last night, the Cubs beat the Reds 8-1. Lester got the win. He's 4-1 on the season. The Cardinals either score a half a run
or
a dozen.
Right.
They scored 12 last night, beat the Phillies 12-4. Michael Wacha 5-1 on the season.
By the way, Wacha deserves some credit.
He does,
and I've not been a big Walker fan. I thought he was kind of feeling for the plate early, and I wasn't confident in him. I thought both he and Wainwright appeared a little shaky, but he's proved me totally wrong.
And Cardinals got some more bad news. Shortstop Paul DeJong is on the DL. Had surgery on a broken hand. Had a plate inserted, so that's going to be longer than 10 days for sure. And we'll see how things go.
Can Jerko play shortstop?
Played last night. Yeah,
I know he did.
Well,
but can he? Is that a
Yeah, that was his position when he came up. He played shortstop in San Diego. And
is he quick enough?
Don't know. In the long term, I don't know.
Is he as quick as that former catcher from Illinois State, DeJong?
Well, he might be. He might be. Neither one of those guys are going to win.
Do you ever hear of a catcher going to shortstop, ever?
No.
Anywhere?
No, especially at that level, no. I've not. I heard of a catcher going to pitcher.
Oh, yeah.
Jason Mott.
Yeah, he could throw hard.
Yep.
But, you know, that I mean, the requirements for a catcher and a shortstop are entirely different.
Yep. Illinois baseball, Lauren mentioned that, one more game today. Illinois is taking the first two of this regular season finale, final series. Illinois beat Nebraska 13-6. Brendan Spillane, number 21 home run. Illinois now 31-17, 15-8 in the Big Ten. This afternoon at 3 o'clock, then we'll get the Big Ten pairings coming up shortly for that tournament
and
next
tomorrow,
week.
And tomorrow, Dancer's got a really tough one with number one Wake Forest in the round of eight, by the way. You're getting serious when you get to the round of eight, aren't you?
Quarterfinals for the first time since 2007. Illinois beat TCU in the 8-9 seeded teams 4-0. They'll take on number one Wake Forest on their home courts They went down and played them earlier in the year, and it didn't go so well. But Illinois had a guy or two out during that match, and so we'll see. When you get to that point, you never know what's going to happen. 9:27 is the time. We'll take our second time out on Saturday Sports Talk. We're at Bromley Hall. The Kiwanis Club Pancake Breakfast going on until 11. If you'd like to join us, come on over, and we'll take a time out and be back with more of the show after this. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk, everybody. 9:30, WDWS, Champaign-Urbana. Steve Kelly, Lauren Tate. Thanks to Lou Henson for joining us off the top of the show. Brett Stillwell stopped by to talk about some capital projects and facilities. Our friend Steve Beckett is here with us. How were those pancakes this morning? Okay,
they were good. 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 Good to see you, Steve.
Good to see you. Got a little pregame meal for you, a pre-show meal, and we're set to go. Your thoughts on the news earlier in the week, the Supreme Court ruling on sports gambling. Were you surprised by it at all?
Not really. You know, the case happens to be on the subject of sports gambling, but that's not really the big issue that the Supreme Court is looking at. It's actually a relationship between the federal government and state government. That's the big issue. And the doctrine is called anti-commandeering. And the question is whether the federal government, by legislation that Congress would enact, can tell states what they can do or what they can't do. That's the big issue. So here, Congress passed this PASPA law, which was to protect professional and amateur sports. And the idea was that no state could prohibit or enact laws to permit gambling, except for Las Vegas and a couple of others. And New Jersey had sort of the option that if they wanted to, they could adopt it. Well, they didn't adopt it, and then they did try to adopt it. And so that's where the lawsuit was between New Jersey and the NCAA. Because it wasn't criminal, it permitted the NCAA to enjoin any state that tried to bring on sports gambling. So the Supreme Court in this decision, using this doctrine that I'm talking about, basically said that Congress has no power to tell a state what it can or can't do. So I don't think the Supreme Court cares a darn about gambling. I don't think that's what the case is about. But the effect on sports gambling is that any state that wants to now have sports gambling is going to be allowed to do it. And so I guess we ask ourselves, what does that mean for Illinois? You know, most states that do have it in locations like casinos. And one would expect if Illinois were to go that route, that's what they would do. It would be a kind of casino gambling. Well, we all know in Illinois what that means is who gets the casino licenses and who gets the gambling, and if follow the money, and you know the kind of problems that you're going to have. It's not an easy thing for a state, I think, to just all of a sudden say. And then you add to that internet gambling, and it gets even more complicated.
Offshore gambling.
Yeah, it is.
And $150 million worth of gambling under the table every billion.
Well, right.
Did I say million?
Right, it's billion. Right. And so, I mean, ultimately, I think you could see it's sort of like Prohibition, right? Yes. I mean, with the end of Prohibition,
yeah.
You make all the money's there in illegal gambling, you make it legal, and then you use it as a source of revenue for the states. Part of me says that here it's May and our General Assembly ought to be working on this right now, right?
It would seem to me the toughest thing to do is to pass laws that the people don't want. You know, and you mentioned whether it's booze, whether it's gambling. I mean, it goes on, okay? Now, are we going to make it legal, or are we going to continue to do it under the table?
That's true. And I think it's pretty clear that Illinois will at some point have sports gambling.
Absolutely.
There's just too much revenue available for government by having sports gambling.
All the money.
And really, I think you've got a model. You can see what they've done in Las Vegas. They have a commission. They do have licenses. They do have sports betting locations. Heck, when Illinois played UNLV last year.
Yeah.
I was in Las Vegas, and so I got to bet.
Yeah.
I remember betting on the
– Shame on you.
I remember betting on the – well, I lost that one. But I remember betting on the Notre Dame-Navy. There was a bowl game.
Yeah.
And I won. I won big time. Yeah.
Well, now, the NCAA has always opposed gambling. Obviously, they've opposed it. And they've tried to they've tried to affect Las Vegas, but I noticed that several conferences have conducted tournaments there, but the NCAA is against it, you know, from the standpoint of hosting an NCAA tournament, like a regional, that sort of thing. That'll all change. Now, what's going on in Vegas? We got the Oakland Raiders coming in there, right?
Right.
I mean, they're going to be playing football there. It's going to be, we're seeing this, just, it's going to be wide open all across the country in all sports.
I agree.
And from this point on, you know, it's in Illinois, it will certainly be involved with it. Is it better to have it done legally as opposed to the way it's being done right now?
I guess I would say yes. The people are going to gamble anyway. And so you might as well make it legal. Are there that many gambling prosecutions going on in the United States? It's not a high priority law enforcement thing. And so why?
Well, I think the police probably know who is handling gambling in this community right now.
And they
aren't doing anything about it. It goes on.
Well,
it's been going on for years and years.
Right. Well, when I was in high school and college, I can remember prosecutions of gambling. I had a fraternity brother who got prosecuted in a gambling case up in Chicago. So I remember it happening. But I can't tell you the last time I've heard of a gambling prosecution. Of a criminal gambling prosecution. I just can't think of one.
So who benefits the most from this?
Well, I think citizens who are sports followers and who like to gamble, they benefit by it ultimately. State governments, I think, benefit by it because they're going to get a revenue stream that they haven't had.
When you say that those who like to gamble benefit, the only problem is that they don't benefit.
Well,
you're going to lose.
It's like going to the track.
Yeah.
Going to the track is fun, all right? And obviously there are people who can't control themselves, but that's true in anything in life.
Yeah.
But most of us, if we go to the track, it's fun. And we have our own limits.
And we all figure we're going to lose. You know,
well, that's why it's fun. It's fun to win. And part of it is the experience of doing the gambling.
Well, I'm going to switch you over.
Okay.
Your name is, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Guess.
Mike Slive.
You got it right. What's your reaction to Mike Slive? He passed away this last week. And his involvement with the University of Illinois case involving Dion and Bruce Pearl and that whole thing.
Well, it brings back some pleasant and unpleasant memories. I didn't see eye to eye with Mike Slive. I didn't agree with.
But first of all, what was his job? He was hired by the university.
Right. Well, he was with the bond firm. And the bond firm had a great reputation at the time for representing colleges and universities who were undergoing NCAA investigations.
So where in the university hired him?
That's correct, because he had that. He had a great reputation. And the concept that he brought was he would run a parallel investigation. So you've got Randy Rueckert and all those guys out, you know, doing their investigation.
In the NCAA.
Well, Mike Slive would talk to the same people. He would do the same investigation.
Representing the U of I.
Representing the U of I. And the idea then is to give the U of I advice about what's the best thing to do vis-a-vis the NCAA, because ultimately you're going to have a hearing in front of the infractions committee. And what what Mike would do is he would agree with the NCAA. So even though in the investigation that he's conducting, you've got Jimmy, Dion, Dick Nagy, Lou Henson, etc., and all the people out here on the campus who they're talking to saying that what the NCAA is saying is not correct, Mike Slive is saying, well, but the circumstantial, I'll never forget this. So he invited each of the lawyers for the individuals to come to Chicago to his office, and had a private meeting with us in which he's trying to tell us that the circumstantial evidence is that Illinois is guilty, that this crowd about 80,000 and the Blazer is true. And he isolated us. He isolated me, isolated Mark Goldenberg, he isolated Tom Harrington.
And by the way, Goldenberg was representing?
Jimmy Collins.
And you were representing?
Deion Thomas.
Okay.
And Tom had Lou Henson, okay? And, of course, it isn't as if the three of us don't know what's going on. But in the meantime, of course, we're doing our own investigation. We got the telephone records, and we were able to show the links between Bruce Pearl and Rich Hilliard and, you know, the whole nine yards. You remember, mm-hmm. this is ancient history now. And ultimately...
This is like 1990.
Yeah, ultimately, we make our presentations to Byron Higgins, who's university counsel, and Mort Weir. And it becomes ultimately Mort's call about whether or not you continue with Mike's life or not. And you may remember I had a polygraph. I had Deion take a polygraph that he passed, et cetera. So there was no offer. And you know,
there was no $80,000 offer.
Oh, no, no. And ultimately, it was clear to us that this is a Bruce Pearl con job. Now, I think history has proved that we're absolutely right. He is the ultimate con man. but at the time, Mike's life is taking him serious. Okay, so this is very difficult. And so ultimately, the breakthrough is Mort Weir's decision. The guy's got to go.
And he fired him.
And he fired him.
Yeah.
And so then he brought in Frank McGar, retired federal judge. Mm-hmm. And the whole presentation to the Infractions Committee was 180 from what Mike Slive would have done. Mike Slive would have fired Lou, would have fired Jimmy, would have had Deion out of here, you know, just would have been a mess. So as you say, this brings up this boil back in me when I hear about it. Now, Mike's life's entitled, it was entitled to his philosophy of practice, and he obviously enjoyed some sort of success.
And went from there.
He had a great reputation, and he went to SEC commissioner, which he held for a long time, was very, very well respected, and ultimately had to deal with Bruce Pearl again.
Is it true that he established a rule within the SEC where all infraction charges went through him before they went to the NCAA? That he was the stopgap for anything that went on in the SEC. They went to him first. He requested that the member schools do that.
Well, I understand that. If they self-discovered an infraction, they had to report it to him before they reported it to the NCAA. But some infractions get reported directly to the NCAA.
Okay. Sure. Well, they would. But, I mean, he wanted them to go through him. That's all I'm
right.
saying.
Right. Well, let's face it. I mean, he was pretty tough as a SEC commissioner.
By the way, you didn't tell the end of the Illinois story. We were found not guilty, but...
But we were guilty anyway.
That's right.
Because we lacked institutional control. And I've ultimately determined that the lack of institutional control was that the U of I listened to these lawyers. You know, they shouldn't have listened to us, right? That's what the NCAA was upset with. I mean, I'm telling you, the Infractions Committee didn't care for Tom Harrington, Mark Goldenberg, Steve Beckett. They didn't care for us at all.
It was almost as if they were sitting around trying to come up with a term.
They did, yeah.
Nobody used institutional control that I know of before that. It's like, let's come up with a term and let's say that's what it was.
Well, they it's like we have to find something.
Yeah.
We have
just
to find
Because we said you're not guilty doesn't mean that you didn't do it. Right? Something
right.
like that.
Right. That was, what's his name, Smirt, the man with no vowels.
Need to take a break at 9:43. We're going to keep Steve Beckett for another short segment. If you'd like to join us, feel free to jump in, 356-9397. On Saturday Sports Talk, again, we're at Bromley Hall for the 24th annual Kiwanis Pancake and Sausage Breakfast. It's going on until 11 o'clock. You've got time to get on over. Stop by and say hi, and we'll have more Sports Talk after this. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk, everybody. 9:47 is the time. Steve Kelly, Lauren Tate. We're talking with U of I Law Professor Steve Beckett as well. Talking about gambling, a little bit of history of the University of Illinois, with the passing recently of Mike Slive, the most recently employed as SEC commissioner. And back to gambling for a little bit. Lauren, you had a question you wanted to bounce off Steve there about Las Vegas.
Well, I just wonder how Vegas interacted with everybody else having, I say everybody, I think in time you'll have at least 10 or 15 more very soon, states that can wager on sports. How will that impact Vegas when you don't have to go to Vegas? Maybe you could just go to Chicago or maybe you go to Champaign.
Well, I suppose Vegas may lose some element of gambling revenue because you don't have to go to Vegas. I can bet in Champaign-Urbana, for instance, if I were to adopt it. But on the other hand, as I think Steve said, Vegas now will be a venue. And so I think its economy...
Be a host.
Right. Its economy will, you know, skyrocket that way. And so there'll be greater interest, I suppose, on gambling related to those events than otherwise would occur.
Once upon a time, I went to the racetrack with a buddy of mine. He's a basketball coach who took the bets at the Mayfair and Hawthorne for the Mob. Mob guys didn't want to put their money didn't want to go in the window because if they hit big, they'd have to pay taxes. So they have their own guy doing it. I just wonder now, offshore gambling, do you have to pay taxes on offshore winnings?
You have to pay taxes on offshore winnings. Of course you do.
Okay, so how do gamblers gamble in a manner in which they don't have to pay taxes on winnings?
Well,
they have their own.
The regulations require any winning bet of $600 or more, there has to be a 1099 issued.
Okay, so I'm going to have my own guy who's unrelated to, I'm going to have an underworld figure handling my gambling so I don't have to pay taxes.
Well, but now the gambling's going to be regulated all across the country, so now we're going to increase the income tax evasion enforcement.
Okay.
Because your scheme is going to get caught. Your scheme is going to get caught. If in fact, that those winnings are not reported, you're going to get caught.
Well, there's millions of dollars of unreported winnings right now going on, millions and millions. We have $150 billion gambled under the table in the United States. You think those people are paying taxes on that?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I'm suspicious.
I'm still back on Lauren and underworld figures.
Oh, man, I had a guy that was, he was connected. He was really, that's the word, connected.
Connected.
Right? Yeah, and they had hand signals, Steve. They didn't get up from their chairs. They sat in their seats, and they would signal to him, and he would, the amount and the number of the horse in the race and everything else, and he kept a record of it, and they didn't pay off till the day was over. You know,
incredible.
It goes on.
I know nothing about gambling short of a $5 Nassau on the golf course or something like that, but I really don't know much about it. But it would
you're going to be in trouble with taxes someday because all the money you win on the golf course.
Oh, right, yeah. Sure. I contributed to a lot of retirement funds down there. But take the sport of baseball. As slow as it is to play, there's so many things going on. Couldn't you just sit there and bet on the next pitch being a strike or the next pitch being a ball or the next pitch being a base hit to center or whatever?
They do have bets. Yeah. They do have bets about individual performance.
Yeah.
And they really do. I mean, they have bets about the score at certain innings and bets at the end of the game. And then you can
– over, under.
Right. You can parlay several games. You can bet Cubs, Cardinals, White Sox.
You almost need you could get a class in how to bet on a certain sport.
I'm sure that'll happen, yeah. Steve.
In the state of Illinois, if this happens, and I guess everybody thinks it will, what's the time frame on this, you think?
Well, it'll take legislation through the General Assembly.
They agree on anything?
I was just going to say.
They'll agree on this.
We see how smooth it is. Well, they'll agree on it in the sense that you've got a model in Las Vegas. We already have existing casinos. And so I think the first steps will likely be just permitting sports betting in those locations. And then you'll get reports on the revenue, and you'll see what the result is. And then ingenious people will come up with ideas about how it can be expanded to increase the revenue, increase the taxes, and increase ultimately the benefit to government. I mean, could we even have a balanced budget in Illinois based on sports gambling? Whoa.
Well, I wonder. By the way, I saw where the University of West Virginia has already a sponsor going to the legislature who's going to present a bill in which West Virginia would receive 1% plus. It's 1.something% of the net. I don't know, of the gross or net. I don't know which it is, but on gambling in that state.
Don't you think that that's ultimately going to happen?
Here?
With the NCAA? No, the NCAA. They're going to want the 1%.
Well, they're going to want something because they're the ones presenting the competition. Yeah.
They're going to want their percent. The NFL is going to want its, and NBA is going to get its share. Major League Baseball is going to get its share.
So you have less and less of a chance of making a profit. If you gamble enough, you're not going to win.
Well, I think that's fair.
I don't know if it's fair, but I think it's the way it works.
I think it's factual.
The house always wins.
The house always wins ultimately. So if you want to win, the way to win is to make one bet and then quit. Then you got a fair, at least you got a 40% chance of winning.
Any other thoughts on this, Steve? Anything that we need to keep an eye out for?
Well, I guess the only other thing the law professor in me wants to remind people that the reason why the Supreme Court did this isn't about gambling. You stop and think about it. So where you have these cities in the country or states that are refusing to enforce immigration laws, can you see it? The federal government cannot tell those local police departments or those local governments have to enforce those immigration laws.
That's
why you have a judge like Elena Kagan who joined these conservative justices all about this doctrine. So this is it's a much bigger picture than just sports betting.
That's why we brought you on, Steve, to explain it to us.
Hey, we appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Lauren.
That's Steve Beckett with us as we move towards the top of the hour. Lauren, keep your headset on there a minute or two here. We want to talk about some things going on. We mentioned the NCAA tennis, which a nice win for Brad Dancer's team over TCU. And they'll play next in the quarterfinals against Wake Forest. And they're playing well at the right time right now, aren't they?
Yeah, we just need to get that doubles point somehow. They got two freshmen playing in the lead doubles. They've moved Bukic all the way down to three. He and Bukic are playing the third doubles. And I think it's the best. You know, if you got Bukic playing third, you got a better chance of him winning. If the two freshmen can pull it off at number one, you really got something. But the doubles point's just 1 point, and obviously Illinois will be an underdog tomorrow at 3 o'clock. But nevertheless, they have a shot. They really do have a shot. They're good enough. This is an Elite Eight match.
Yeah. And Ohio State's still in the quarterfinals, too.
Boy.
So two Big Ten teams in there.
Yeah, Ohio State's going to probably win the whole thing, in my opinion. I think they're awfully good. They've been close and never won it.
One more home baseball game this afternoon, weather permitting. There might be a little bit of a weather threat in this, but Illinois baseball now kind of turning things around. It wasn't that long ago, a week or two, we were talking about them kind of going the wrong way at the wrong time, and now they've got it turned around a little bit.
Well, yeah, I think that they've certainly hit the ball extremely well against Nebraska. They had some good – they lost a really tough third game to Michigan. What a shame, that 5-4 game. We got into quite a discussion on this. You being a baseball fan, Steve, what do you do with one out and a runner on second and the batter hits a long fly ball to center field that actually ends up clearing the center fielder's head? Now, with one out, the guy on second, which I believe was Turchin, has the decision to make as to whether to tag up in case the ball is caught to get to third with two out, or do you take a lead and then take off and go when the ball clears the center fielder's head. What he did was he tagged up, and then he got thrown out at home. I think you have to take a lead in that situation. You have to make sure you score, don't you?
I think so. 3 o'clock this afternoon, Illinois and Nebraska, then the Big Ten tournament next week in Omaha. We'll see how the brackets go, the top eight teams to make it into the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, well, Illinois is in that tournament. Now the main what we're fighting for now is to get in the NCAA.
Yeah.
Ed Bond's going to be in Omaha, I believe. He's going to watch them all.
you have eight teams there, and if Illinois does well there, there'll be a cinch to get in the NCAA. They don't have to win it, but they've got to win some games. It would help if they win some games there to get in the NCAA tournament.
So we'll have a correspondent in Omaha if needed next week. Ed Bond. 9:57 is the time. We'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll be on into the second hour of Saturday Sports Talk. Again, we're at Bromley Hall at the Kiwanis Club's 24th annual Pancake and Sausage Breakfast, All You Can Eat. Come on over. Another hour to go on that as well. We'll get Brad Underwood on the phone and talk some Illinois basketball when we come back. Stay with us on Saturday Sports Talk.
It's the second hour of Saturday Sports Talk. Join the program by calling 217-356-9397 or send a text to the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. You can also email us at talk@wdws.com. Here again are your hosts, Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly.
Moving into hour number two on WDWS Champaign-Urbana Saturday Sports Talk with you until 11. Phone line is open, 356-9397. If you'd like to join us, got a little bit of an open line here. Any topic is open for discussion. If you want to jump in on the gambling thing, you're welcome to do that. You want to talk some baseball, that's okay too. Basketball, that's a fair game. A little bit of schedule news this week, Lauren, with the Gavitt tip-off games being announced, the matchups. Illinois will play Georgetown on Tuesday, November the 13th. That would be right before they would go to Hawaii for the Maui Invitational. So a Georgetown team coached by Patrick Ewing coming to the State Farm Center.
Yeah, that will be a good attraction, and I think that Ewing is he's an attraction himself. And Georgetown's got a good reputation, but not the same kind of level basketball team that they had a couple years back.
Well, we can say that about both those programs. Yeah. They're kind of both in the same spot. Their record was very similar last year. And Georgetown started off with a real nice record overall. Then they got into conference play and things dropped a little bit. But that'll be a neat matchup. The other matchups, if you missed that, Wisconsin plays at Xavier, Michigan at Villanova. How about an NCAA title match rematch on Villanova's home court? Seton Hall plays at Nebraska, Marquette at Indiana.
By the way, before you get off Villanova, did you see how DiVincenzo, the sixth man who was such a star for them in the tournament, has done so well in the NBA trials?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's a sixth man who may be a lottery pick. Now, I may be exaggerating, but he's going to be drafted if he stays.
Sounds like if he's not a lottery pick, he's certainly a first round pick.
And yeah, it sounds like it. I mean, how can you be a sixth man and be a high pick? Like, although Gonzaga last year had a player who was a freshman and was their sixth man, and he got drafted last year. So I guess it's certainly possible.
Steve Kelly and Lauren Tate talking some basketball. Brad Underwood, the Illini head coach, is with us on the phone. Brad spent some time in St. Louis last night, but good morning, Brad. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys this morning?
Good. Cardinal fans, thank you for whatever you did to get the Cardinals'
you
bats
pulled
going
them through
last night, getting a 12-run win out of them down there. Talk about what you did. What were some of the things you got involved with down at Busch Stadium?
Yeah, it was a great day. It was the Cardinals had us in. We had a little rain delay, a little Mother Nature to deal with, but it was we had a little the band, the cheerleaders, along with that other school across the border. They had their people here, and they had a little cheer contest. The bands played, and then signed autographs, took pictures, and the marketing department, Cassie and her crew, did a great job of putting on a good event. Great Illini turnout, and then we sat in a rain delay for a little bit, and then we threw out the first pitch, and then went and met with some great University of Illinois alums.
You mentioned the people from the other side of the border there. Did you bring the Bragging Rights Trophy along just to give them a look at it? They haven't seen it for a while.
You know, it was asked about. Somebody asked me if we brought it, and we keep that thing tucked away in a nice little spot where everybody can see it, and we keep that in Champaign. So we didn't bring ours to flaunt.
Well, Coach, I'm going to throw you on a difficult subject here. What's your reaction to the gambling decision by the Supreme Court that's going to open up eventually sports gambling and college basketball gambling for the nation and not just Las Vegas?
Yeah, you know, Lauren, I'll be honest. We talked about it at Big Ten meetings briefly. We were Big Ten meetings Monday and Tuesday, and obviously I think it was the day it broke the court ruling had changed, and I haven't studied it in depth. I think it'll be interesting to see how each state handles it, how the NCAA handles it, and so on and so forth. I think that it's inevitable, probably the way it sounds, but it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. To say I'm up to speed on every facet and every detail of the intricacies of it, I'm not. But it'll be a hot topic here, I would think, for the next short year or so.
Another hot subject, I think, is what's going on. I think as a result of the Romeo Langford recruitment by Indiana University, the Washington Post and, of course, the Indianapolis Star have come out with, I think, really revealing stories on how some of this stuff works with Adidas. And apparently, unless I'm getting this wrong, Adidas provided $100,000 for the father of Langford's AAU team. The father's AAU team, and therefore Romeo, of course, is in the camp for Indiana. What's your have you read that story, and do you understand what actually took place there?
You know, I haven't read it. I saw bits and pieces of what Coach Pitino had said, and I think it's something that we're all dealing with right now. It's at the forefront of what's been going on with the FBI investigation and so on and so forth. But, I think that's part of what the Rice Commission was put together to deal with and handle. And I thought they've made some very valid points and some great strides. And yet I think that it's up to us coaches to have a voice in this. And the Rice Commission allowed that. And I think we'll have a little more clarity in some of these things as we develop. August 6th is kind of the deadline, we were told, at the Big Ten meetings with some of the Rice Commission stuff and how that's put forth. It involves so many other people, Lauren, that it's not just in college basketball's control.
The NBA,
the NBA Players Association with one and done agents.
Right.
So it gets way beyond the college scheme and college infrastructure, and so there are a lot of parties involved, and it's very complicated. You got publicly traded companies, so it's a wide spectrum right now.
Petrino's point, I think, was that everything that they did was legal in terms of just pure legality. I mean, it looks kind of, I mean, we know what's happening, but it's something that Indiana really is in no trouble for, because everything was done legally as far as we can tell. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, to my knowledge, and again, I don't know the details of it, but, that those things are done before those young people ever hit a college campus. They're done when they're freshman or sophomore in high school a lot of times. So, I don't know I don't want to speak to stuff that I don't know facts about, but it's a wide-ranging problem that has a lot of factors and so many bodies of people involved.
Talking to Brad Underwood, let's talk about the schedule a little bit. I mentioned the Gavitt game lineup came out earlier this week. Illinois to play Georgetown in Champaign coming up in November. Any update on a game perhaps at the United Center? Is that something still being worked on?
Yes, it's. We should have some clarity on the ACC game here in the next week to 10 days. We hope we're looking at still finalizing a couple of different dates before we can release. And I don't talk about games until they're contracted and really signed. But the Gabba games, Georgetown's a great opponent. Obviously, we have UNLV returning to Champaign. And along with the trip to Maui and 20 AC or 20 Big Ten games, we've got an incredible home schedule, and we've got a game with probably 28 or 29 high major games on that schedule. So it'll be a great schedule and a great challenge.
Boy, you got a really tough schedule. When you consider Maui, and you got a game in St. Louis, and a game in Chicago that you haven't announced yet, and UNLV in Georgia. With a young team, you're going to have a really you're going to have to rebuild right from the ground floor. Is this the kind of schedule you really want for this team?
Well, we have no choice, Lauren. I mean, I think the one thing that is there's a couple of things that are very evident today in college, and one of those is that with one and done, with all the transfers, with fifth-year transfers, the model of building teams through a four-year cycle is really gone. And so, you know, you're looking at a team like, and I'm going to use Duke because they lost all five starters. They're going to be young as well. And youth is something that is really exciting, and yet we all know how valuable experience can be, but that puts tremendous value on our guys we've got returning, and we're going to play some games, and we're going to throw these guys out there, and they're going to learn on the fly. I think the other factor with that, Lauren, is basically the NCAA selection committee has said, and the Big Ten was very affected by this, play people. You have to play people, and a loss to a quadrant one or quadrant two team is much more valuable than a win over a bottom 200 or below team. So you better play them. And Nebraska was a great case in point of that last year. The Big Ten played more games against lower quadrants or lower 200 and below than any league in the country, and that was.
That hurt.
We got that message. We got that message loud and clear at NCAA Selection Sunday, only getting four teams in, and getting a 13-win Nebraska team. They went on the road in the NIT, so they didn't even get a home seed in the NIT. So, I think the selection committee spoke really loudly about strength of schedule. And when you're a Power 5 conference, you better play good people.
You know, a couple times in recent years, Illinois has been within a game or just a first four out. And now they're talking, now the ACC is talking about moving it from 68 teams to 72 in the NCAA tournament. What's your thinking about that?
I love it. I love it. I think
more the better, merrier, huh?
I think there's tremendous value in it. And I think you start flying teams all over, adding the other four teams. You can do it by region. You've got tremendous travel costs. We know how quickly that turn happens from a Sunday to play on a Tuesday, and then you're at another site if you win. You could keep those games a little more regional. I think there's a lot of positives for the addition of four more.
Talking basketball with Brad Underwood for another couple of minutes. You've got six new guys coming in. Have you ever been part of a staff, coach, where you had that kind of roster churn, if you will, from one year to the next, other than when you came in and took a new job? But on an existing team, have you been part of that big a change with six new guys?
Yeah, quite a bit, actually. I think that there's – one, you forget I was a junior college coach, so we recruited
right.
A new team every year. And I think that our first year at Stephen F., we had that. We always signed five or six guys at Stephen F. In every class. Like I said, there's it's almost unavoidable. I think there was one team in our Big Ten meetings that maybe had their roster filled. Everybody else had as many as one or two, three scholarships, some even four scholarships open. Because of guys being in the NBA combine and testing the waters. So it's not going to be – that's going to be a more normal thing probably than abnormal with the way that things are trending and with transfers and the NBA stuff now. But when I was at Western, we had a lot of years where we signed 6-7 guys, and that was something that I'm excited about that.
Coach, will you have all your players in June? And how many – you're going to have 4 hours, is that correct? And how are you going to work that?
Yeah, we're Tevian will be here a little bit late just due to when his high school graduation is. He'll miss the first 5 or 6 days out in L.A. They don't graduate until June 15th or 16th, something like that. Then we'll find out what happens with Io. He's obviously involved in USA basketball. Those tryouts start here at the end of the month, May 31st through June 3rd, and then the actual games start the 6th or 7th, and he'd miss maybe the first week as well. So, but we'll have everybody here, and we're excited about that. Get them in the weight room, get them acclimated, and then like you said, Lauren, we've got new rules where we've got 4 hours on the court and then 4 hours with Fletch instead of 2 and 6. So I'm really excited about that. That gives us, with some new guys, gives us a great opportunity to spend more time with them. It gives them more opportunity to get to really start to implement a few things. We'll spend one session offensively, one session defensively. Then we're going to do some things a little bit different. We're going to spend one session just shooting, getting a ton of shots, and then and probably that fourth session will be a little bit of combination of individual work and special situations. So we're going to change some things up a little bit, and I'm excited about that.
You're going to change some things up. What do you mean by that? You mean in terms of you've never done it quite this way. Well, you've never had 4 hours before. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, we've never had 4 hours. We've had two. And we've spent things get really, really challenging in the month of July, Lauren, because we've always worked on Monday and Tuesday. And then Wednesday through Sunday we recruit. And now we've got to figure out how to use that calendar and use that time. July becomes, to be quite honest, our busiest month of the year from a travel standpoint, recruiting on campus with our players, and now we get an additional 2 hours with them. So we've got to work through the month of July. But in the past, the month of June has just been all about individual improvement stuff with our players, and we didn't put a lot of X's and O's stuff and scheme stuff in. We're going to change that a little bit this year just because we've got the extra time to do it.
Well, Coach, everybody wonders, I wonder, how tell me how recruiting has changed in terms of the number of offers. We had Lou Henson on earlier this morning at 9 o'clock. By the way, he's doing well. He was here at the pancake breakfast, which we're at. And, you know, Lou'd offer 4 or 5 guys. I mean, that'd be it. And maybe and it might even wind down to less than that. And mostly we're in-state, by the way. How can you offer so many? I looked at Indiana a couple of years ago. They'd offer 25 guys in one session, and they don't have 25 scholarships. How does that work?
Yeah, recruiting is today never ending. First of all, we used to be that the month of May, for coaches was kind of a slow time. And just like I said earlier, now we're setting at Big Ten meetings in May. And everybody's got scholarships open. And a lot of teams are waiting on the NBA combine. Now we've given players the opportunity to explore those opportunities. More players than ever put their name into the draft and went through the combine and went through the process. And yet if they don't feel comfortable, they can come back. So it leaves coaches in a tough spot. So you better recruit every day, all day, and you better have not just option A, but you better have down to about J, K, and L as options in there, because you never know what's gonna happen and how things are gonna play out. And when you're talking about 850 transfers every year. You're going to talk about guys that every year 40% of your roster, when they're incoming freshmen, by the time they're sophomores, they're gone. Yeah. That's an NCAA statistic. So recruiting is about seeing players, knowing who they are, being available. Now we have a new, another new factor involved in this. You're going to see us really dive into the 2020 class as well as the 19 class because you have so many guys reclassified. So you have to offer those kids as well. And it becomes, the local young man, Francis Okoro. Francis was a great example of a reclassification. Bagley at Duke last year was a reclassification. He classed up.
Yeah.
We're not recruiting one class anymore. We're recruiting two classes. You talk about the regionalization. Regionalization and recruiting is over. Yes, do you want to keep your kids close to home? Absolutely. We'd be extremely foolish not to do that. But national television has exposed your conferences, your teams, every game's on TV. So it doesn't matter whether they're in Florida, whether they're in Europe, whether they're in Los Angeles. Everybody knows about everybody's program. And so instead of having just the Saturday afternoon Big Ten game of the week, and that's what everybody saw in your region, and if you were in the East, you saw the Big East and the ACC, now it's national, and television's been a big part of that.
What's your reaction to the inability to discuss recruits when that's all you do all day, but when you get with the media, you can't because it's an NCAA rule? What is this a good rule?
I don't know. I don't know if I've ever thought about it. We've never been able to talk about them, so you don't. And yet, it doesn't matter what event I go to. I can go to any recruiting event, and I'm going to find you there, and I'm going to find Sturdy there, and right on down the list, and Piper.
That's all we talk about, you know.
and so you guys are there. You guys, there's no secrets in with social media today. But yet, you know, we as coaches sure can't talk about it.
It's kind of a strange thing because I just wonder if Rivals and Scout, which is now 247, would have succeeded so much if they weren't the only ones that can talk about, you know, I say the only ones, but they've emphasized the recruiting and made a business out of it because you can't talk. If you could talk about it, if all the coaches could talk about it, we wouldn't need to talk to Rivals, you know? They would never have existed.
Well, that's how the star system came about. You know, star system came about for subscribership. Hey,
yes.
Give a kid a star, you know? Yeah. So, hey, we got a 4-star. We got a 5-star. That's why I've said it many times. I could care less about a star system. That's usually somebody that's just given to a kid to, you know.
It's an opinion.
Subscribe to. Yeah. So I, you know, but it's. But you're probably right there. You're probably onto something.
Brad, we appreciate your time. Last night, back to the first pitch. Did you work on that at all during the week, or did you want to make sure you got it over right?
No, I threw. I got a great lesson a couple years ago. Don't just lob it. Don't ever try to throw it hard. And I threw about 10 balls yesterday in the practice facility before I left, I've hurt my knee. My knee is knee issues.
You're injured.
So it was. And it's your left one. It's the one you got to land on.
Yeah.
So it just became the soft toss.
Hey, you know, I learned a lesson on that. Never go all the way to the mound. Stand in front of the mound. Oh. Nobody knows the difference. You know, just stand right in front. It's a lot closer there.
And we were with Barry Odoms, the football coach at Missouri, and he was his two boys were there, and they're both there. They play baseball, and they were giving him a hard time about, you know, you got to break 70 on the gun, you can get suckered into a real embarrassing moment really quick. But it's amazing when you don't throw very often how your muscle memory lapses. So I threw a few yesterday morning before I went.
All right. Well, Coach, thanks for your time. We sure appreciate it. We'll see you when you get back in town.
All right, guys. Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks. Brad Underwood, Illini basketball coach, with us at 10:25. Need to take a break. We'll do that. And we've got more for you from Bromley Hall on Saturday Sports Talk back after this. Saturday Sports Talk continues from the Kiwanis Club's 24th annual Pancake and Sausage Breakfast at Bromley Hall. Another 30 minutes or so here if you're in the neighborhood and haven't had breakfast or maybe a brunch or early lunch, swing on by Bromley Hall on 3rd Street on the U of I campus. Along with Lauren Tate, I'm Steve Kelly. Thanks to our guests so far this morning, Brad Underwood, Steve Beckett, Brett Stilwell, Lou Henson have all joined us, and now our friend Jim Dye from the News Gazette has finished his pancake breakfast and is sitting down with us. You still awake?
I am still awake, but I'm going to go home and take a nap.
We were talking with Steve Beckett. You may have heard some of that about Supreme Court ruling this week on legalized gambling. Let's get your thoughts on that and what it might mean to the state of Illinois.
Well, the ruling is not really surprising to me because, I mean, I think the court has been pretty clear about the federal-state divide and that the feds don't really have the authority to tell the states what they can and cannot do. So they basically said it's a state decision, unless, of course, there is, overruling or superior federal legislation. I mean, Congress can also address this problem, and if they do, that might eliminate what the state's options. But anyhow, I think primarily about this in terms of the state of Illinois, and I don't think there's any question that the legislators are going to be falling all over themselves to pass a gambling bill because they want the revenue. At the same time, you're going to have gambling lobbyists hurling thousands and thousands of dollars at legislators to try to get a bill that favors their side. The real battle here, I think, is going to, you know, Steve mentioned it when he was on the air, he said, well, the perfect place to do this would be at the already existing casinos. And I think that is probably right, because if you've been
rebuild those places that have been falling down.
Sure. And those places are still doing pretty well, but there's so much gambling in Illinois, it's starting to cannibalize itself. You know, when you have these video gaming parlors on every street mm-hmm. corner, that's yeah. a lot of people that aren't going to the casinos. But anyhow, the casinos will say, well, let us have a sports book. But then somebody else who wants to get in the business is going to say, wait a minute, don't give them the sports book, give me the sports book. And what has happened the last few years in Springfield is that the gambling expansion opponents, which include existing casinos, and those who want to open new casinos have fought themselves to a standstill over expansion, and therefore there has been no expansion. So there's going to be a huge political fight in terms of who gets to run a sports book and who doesn't. That's the real issue. Who gets it and who doesn't, and who's going to make the money and who gets the campaign contributions.
Now, if the university wants to get a little piece of this, if they'll have a legislator go forward and say, Illinois should get 1% because... And if you know, everybody's going to want their 1%, right?
Well,
so my point
is,
how far can you go before the gambler has no chance to make a profit?
Well, now that's going to be the everybody's going to get paid in this. All the big guys are going to get paid in this. I don't know that the NCAA or individual colleges would really have any standing to demand anything.
Well, I can tell you that I mentioned this in West Virginia. They have a legislator going forward who's going to ask for 1% for West Virginia because, after all, they're providing the athletes who you're gambling on.
That's true, but they're going to do that anyhow, and the state can say, well, you know, you don't have enough clout. This guy has more clout than you. And so you're going to have special pleaders that are going to come in.
Special pleaders, right?
And they're going to have enough clout to get it done. Well, maybe, but I would not think it would be a lot. And you have to remember, Lauren, that the state is so broke that they're not in a position to give anybody a dime. So they're going to say, they'll say, okay, we've got $130 billion in unfunded pensions. We've got $8 billion in unpaid bills. We've got deficit budgets going back 20 years. We can't afford to give the university 1%. I mean, this may get down to the question of do they have the money? That's never stopped the legislature before. Unfortunately, that's why we're in the problems we are now. But I'm not sure that the university is going to be able to say, give me my 1%.
So I was thinking that this might be one thing that the legislative guys could agree on, but maybe not. I mean, when you spin it out and dumb it down a little bit.
they have, over the past few years, a couple of years ago, they did pass a big gambling expansion bill, which Governor Quinn vetoed. And so that's the closest they've come to getting it done. I suspect this is going to happen, but it's going to take the heavyweights in a room cutting the deal, which means Mike Madigan and John Cullerton.
Why did you say plural? It's going to be Madigan.
Well, he's the heaviest of the weights.
Okay.
The governor will have something to say about it. And,
sure.
And a lot to say about it, and so will the state senate.
Where do we go from here? Boy, I'm telling you, this caught me by surprise. I guess it didn't catch you by surprise.
Well, I knew the case was pending, and I actually hadn't paid a lot of attention to it as it was coming to the court. But, no, the ruling did not really surprise me because it's such a – the federalism issue, and particularly under the conservatives of the court have a lot more respect for the federal-state divide, which means that the federal government has specific powers authorized to it, and every other power are reserved to the people or to the states. That's the 10th Amendment. And
but conservatives are on the other side of the immigration issue, which could be affected by this.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that's true. But this is a they were not thinking about gambling, and they're not thinking about immigration or anything. They're thinking about what powers do the states have versus what powers do the feds have. And can the feds command the states, which are separate and indivisible, to do certain things? And they can't. And that's been the way the court's been going for a number of years now.
Good stuff. Appreciate your time. Glad you stopped by.
Well, can I make one?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yes, sir.
We haven't talked about Mike Slive with me.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Now, see, I'm still mad about what happened.
Okay. We all are.
And you didn't mention what people around campus call Mike Slive.
What did they call him?
They called him Mike Slime.
Okay. And Mike Slime. So
Mike Slime. He almost said it.
Mike Slime, who passed away this past week, became the commissioner of the SEC after he had been the representative of the University of Illinois in the Deion Thomas case. Deion, Jimmy, which goes back, and I'm not going to go into the details of it, but Deion was accused of accepting an $80,000 offer from Jimmy to come to the University of Illinois, which wasn't true. And, of course, that's when Pearl was involved in pushing that whole idea. Pearl made the phone call to him and set him up for that $80,000. But anyway, Slive represented the University of Illinois and basically was anti-Illinois.
Well, he was anti-Illinois. And as Steve mentioned it earlier in his appearance, his position basically going into this thing was you just plead guilty to everything, throw all your coaches and players to the wolves, and hope that the NCAA will show mercy in its penalties. And, of course, the NCAA did not show mercy to Illinois, even though they did find it basically not guilty. But did anybody else find any irony in the fact that Mike Slive, the paragon of virtue, went to become the commissioner of the SEC,
yeah,
which really stands for Surely Everyone Cheats.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, so anyhow, you never want to take too much joy in people passing, but
and in a league that Bruce Pearl has held two head coaching jobs.
That's right.
A little irony there.
I wonder if he ever thought about that. Probably not.
Phone lines are open. Hang on with us, Jim, just a moment. Eunice from North Dakota is listening this morning. Hey, Eunice, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm driving right now, so I might get kind of hectic. Hey, but I just wanted to make a comment that I've been following the Allen client Illini controversy, and I asked the Board of Trustees if I could come down and speak to them. So they allowed me to be there on Thursday, and I spoke to them. I talked to them about the chancellor in your area, how he wants to get rid of everything Native American in college.
I don't think that's true, that the chancellor wants to get rid of everything Native American. I don't think that's true.
Well, some of the comments I've been reading on Facebook and some of the stories that have been printed, that's kind of the area that we've been looking at. And I belong to this organization. It's called Native American Guardians Association. What we're doing is we're trying to save anything, our names and images, and we really think it's racist policy that the NCAA has against Native Americans. And we are all in for saving it. I really think that, you know, if the Illini went ahead and did the Chiefs and they did authentic dance of maybe one of the tribes around there, I think that would probably work with them.
Well, I thought the idea of an authentic dance would work last year when they did it, but I see where they moved them, made a move across the street, which would indicate to me that's not exactly supportive entirely, but they did permit it. But Jim, where do you think we're going with the Native American thing and the Chief Illiniwek thing?
I think in the end we're destined to have what we have now, which is the anti-chiefs are unappeasable and the pro-chiefs don't have the chief and they're not going to get the chief or probably anything resembling the chief.
But is it, the chancellor, I don't think, is anti the whole idea. I think he's just trying to work a compromise, it seems to me.
Well, see, now, the problem is there is no compromise.
I understand.
And so I think what the chancellor really would like for this is for this whole issue to disappear. And however he could get that done, that's what he would do.
When a chancellor says to me, or he says, well, 80% of my time is spent on this issue in some weeks.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, that's ridiculous.
Oh,
don't
ridiculous.
Spend any time on it. You're not going anywhere with this.
Yeah, that's what I mean, I think it's a real error on his part to try to bridge a gap that cannot be bridged. And that's just, to the extent that he spends any time at all, I think it's a waste of time.
But anything else, Eunice?
No, I just wanted to make that comment. You know, I thought they got some authentic things there. He was doing halftime dance or something. I bet that would probably help the NCAA, you know, stop the sanctions on Illinois.
Well, there are no sanctions against Illinois other than they can't. This is a decision by the University of Illinois that they don't want the chief. I mean, it isn't.
Yeah, but that's pursuant to this.
True.
That's pursuant to the NCAA saying you can't host events on campus.
That's true.
And you also have to remember that if you want to pull this thing off, you have to kind of do what Florida State did, which is get the approval of the Seminoles tribe, except for the fact that there is no Illini chief or no Illini Indians anymore. And the closest we have is the Peoria tribe, which I'm not sure how much clout they have.
Eunice, thanks for taking time to call. We appreciate it. And Jim, appreciate your time here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Need to take a break. We'll be back with more Saturday Sports Talk at 10:40 in just a moment. Stay with us. On Saturday Sports Talk with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly. We're at Bromley Hall in Champaign, the Kiwanis Club's 24th annual pancake breakfast. All you can eat. Still time for you to get by here. Some pancakes left, I'm told. Jim Graham from Bromley Hall is with us. How are things going, Jim?
You know what? It's wonderful. It's always fun to do the pancake breakfast. And as you said, this is our 24th. And it's great to have you guys here. I'm looking at my notes here, and you guys have been here. 1, 2, 3. So this will be the fifth time you guys have been here for this.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. So we appreciate you coming out, and it's always great to have it's great to see Coach. Great to see him here today, too.
How's the turnout been?
You know, it was good. We're almost at 300 people today, which is good. You know, the gray weather may have scared a few people away, but it's great. We've had a good turnout, and you know what's fun about this is it's really a great community event. It's great to see people in town that some people really look forward to coming in and pretending they're in college again, I think.
Have you been at all 24 of these?
I have been.
By the way, are you going to be at number 25?
I'm going to be at number 25, but not in the same capacity.
You're really retiring?
I am retiring, yeah. Yesterday was my last official day, and it's been a great career with the Bromley Group. 38 years, so
wow.
A lot of fun.
Right in this building.
Right in this building, yeah. We've got some other operations that I've traveled to, but my office has always been right here. Yeah. So it's
fun. You're the guy that let Lou Henson in for all that swimming that he did all those years.
Every morning I'd be here to let Lou in. You know, Lou is...
He'd have been here earlier. You had to get some sleep, right?
That's right. He was. There were some mornings he was here kidding at 4 o'clock in the morning ready
sure.
to swim. I mean,
yeah.
He sure loved the pool, and he tells me that's what keeps him young. So
I think that really helped him health-wise over the years because, you know, he's really been battling it lately, but he looks stronger today than I saw him a month ago.
Yeah, he's doing great.
Talk a little bit about your job at Bromley Hall. You do more than pancake breakfast, obviously, but a little bit of your duties over the 38 years here.
We do. Well, I'll tell you what. I got hired here by a gentleman named Jim Phillips. Do you remember Jim Phillips? He died 11 years ago, but was a great mentor, worked with me for 27 years, and he brought me on. I used to wrestle for Illinois, and when I was done wrestling, he was a big wrestling fan, and he said, why don't you come work for us? So I started out as an accounts payable clerk. Worked just about every job in this building, both on the food service side and on the housing side. And lo and behold, for the last 10 years, I've been the president of both companies. So it's been a lot of fun.
What are you going to do now?
You know, my wife's sitting over there. I'm going to go hang with her every day.
Oh, boy, that won't last long. She'll kick you out.
Did she sign off on that? Or
no,
I don't think. Did she just now learn that?
I don't think she did. No, we're going to do some traveling. It's great. We're healthy enough that we love to bike and we like to hike, and so we're going to do that. We have two children that live in Colorado and two that live here, so we're going to kind of split time between the two. We'll probably be here most of the time,
though. Now, who actually stays here? Students, obviously, mm-hmm. In a particular year, or does it matter?
You know what? Our students are primarily freshmen now.
Are they?
725 beds here.
Okay.
And most are Illinois residents. Most are Illinois residents. We have, you know, kind of a wide variety of kids, mostly from the Chicago suburbs.
I got a question. It just seems like we're building residence halls everywhere, all over town. Are we overbuilding?
You know, that's a great question. You know, I thought the same thing 30 years ago. I really did. And most of the stuff you see going up are apartment buildings. And I think that we're going to have a little surplus in the next couple of years. But, you know, they seem to fill them up.
If you have a surplus, does that mean that the top ones are going to be unfilled? Or does that mean that it works its way down?
You know, I think it the good operators...
Would prices be reduced? I mean,
absolutely.
If they're too...
Yep, it's the supply and demand, right? So the bigger the supply, it'll affect price, yeah. And what will happen is the best operators will survive and remain full. You know, the guys that maybe are letting their buildings get old and tired probably won't have as good occupancy.
Has Bromley held up pretty solid over the years?
Knock on wood. We've got a waiting list of close to 250 people for next year. So,
A waiting list.
Yeah. And so we were full a little over a month ago. It's been a great company to work for because they've allowed us to do things. Like the dining room is totally different than when you guys were here last mm-hmm. time. And they have allowed us the funds to put money back into the building and back into the company. And so as long as you keep it nice, the students will come.
Hey, we appreciate your hospitality. Congratulations on your retirement. Enjoy it.
Hey, great. Thanks. Thank you guys for coming out. We really appreciate you coming, and what a great Kiwanis event.
Thank you.
Again. Thanks, guys.
Jim Graham from Bromley Hall. We'll take a break and be back with more Saturday Sports Talk in just a moment. .10:51, Saturday Sports Talk in the home stretch here. Pancake breakfast in the home stretch as well, but they've still got some here if you're in the neighborhood at Bromley Hall on the U of I campus, Kiwanis Club's 24th annual pancake and sausage breakfast. And a whole full load of guests. We appreciate everybody taking time to visit with us this morning. You mentioned earlier the story that was in the Washington Post, Lauren, on the recruitment to Indiana of Romeo Langford, one of the top players, and certainly the top player in the state and one of the top players in the country, and how Adidas was influential in that, to say the least, and Romeo's dad, I think his name's Tim, benefited from that with an AAU team and such. And
to the tune of $100,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Rick Pitino had some comments on that.
Great comments by Pitino, who simply said it's legal. And that's what we're finding. Everybody looks, in recruiting, looks for a loophole in the rules. And some people look for not loopholes, but ways to cheat. And this is the way that the cheating has gone on. I'm not saying there's cheating in this case because they're able to work around it, but this is what's been happening. We talk constantly, as I've said repeatedly, about paying players. Players don't get paid. They never get paid. Families get paid. It's always the mother or the father. It's never, now the money filters down to the student athlete,
But my point is that this is the way it's been going on, and I think everybody should read that article in the Post and in the Indianapolis Star by Kravitz, who's a tremendous writer, by the way, and who hits the nail right on top of the head. And this is the way it's done. And when we talk about, oh boy, Illinois lost this recruit to so and so. Well, Alexander went to Kansas. Well, Alexander's mother got paid $50,000 to go to Kansas. That's why he went to Kansas. There wasn't any other reason. He told Illinois he was coming that morning. He told Gross he's coming. My point is that this has been going on constantly, and it isn't because of the failure necessarily of Illinois coaches, that we just didn't cheat enough. That's all it is. It's the only difference. And we've had coaches fired here because they didn't cheat.
How does this change? Does it change?
Well, I think it's just a revelation to people beginning to understand it better, and people, and now that the NCAA has a better handle on it, on the recommendations of the Condoleezza Rice's committee and others, as they analyze the thing, they're going to try to put a capper on it. I frankly don't think you can do it. I think that there's a particular junior player that I know of right now who's a sensational player in this country, who's already made it clear that his dad's going to get paid or he's not going. And it will continue, except that maybe it'll be limited a little more than it was. But cheating is too embedded into college basketball for it ever to stop.
10:55. We need to take one more final timeout here on Saturday Sports Talk. We'll be back to wrap things up after this. Stay with us. A couple of minutes left here on Saturday Sports Talk from Bromley Hall. Steve Kelly, Lauren Tate. Good list of guests this morning. Lou Henson started things off with us. Always good to visit with Lou in a place that we talked with him about spending a lot of time in this building over the years and swimming. And we talked about how important that was to his health, or anybody's health, really. But he really benefited from opening the doors here at 4 a.m. some mornings.
Yeah, Lou would go to bed late and get up early. I think he lived on 3 to 4 hours sleep in those years.
Brett Stillwell, the senior associate AD for the U of I, joined us as well to talk about capital projects and facilities, some interesting stuff going on the Illinois campus. U of I law professor Steve Beckett was here to talk about gambling.
Didn't he give you a better understanding of just what the Supreme Court did, though? I mean, I thought it strictly from the standpoint of, you know, gambling, and it was a lot more in-depth than that.
We visited for about 20 minutes on the phone with Brad Underwood, who was down in St. Louis last night, and he talked some basketball issues with us. Also, Jim Dye checked in with us here at the Pancake Breakfast, and we talked with Jim Graham from Bromley Hall. So, good time was had by all. We appreciate the work of Ed Bond and our producer in the studio, Blake Landa. Mr. Tate, we'll talk to you next week. I'll be back with you on Monday Sports Talk with Matt Daniels, Scott Ritchie, and Bob Osmussen on Monday evening at 5 o'clock. Appreciate you listening on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. For Lauren Tate, I'm Steve Kelly. Have a good weekend, everybody. Illinois baseball this afternoon at 3. If you're out and about, the Illini in their last home game of the season against Nebraska. Have a good one.
Good job, Steve.